Are you struggling to lower your bad LDL cholesterol, even though you may be taking a statin, swapping steaks for salads, and exercising while listening to this podcast? Ask your doctor if Repatha Evolocumab is right for you. With Repatha, you can dramatically reduce bad cholesterol and the risk of another heart attack while enjoying life too, because you're human. And with convenient self-administration, you can take Repatha in the comfort of your own home. Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Repatha can cause serious allergic reactions. Signs include trouble breathing or swallowing, or swelling of the face. Most common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. Visit Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA. Talk to your doctor today about Repatha.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
What's going on, everybody, and welcome in to Commanding the Huddle. I am your host, Ryan Fowler. Today, guys, we're going to take a peek around the NFC East. The New York Giants, the Dallas Cowboys, the Philadelphia Eagles. I know throughout the draft process, free agency, you guys pay attention to those teams, what they're doing on offense, defense, special teams contributors. Obviously, you see it in Washington, new kicker in the building and a guy with Brandon McManus, brand new long snapper and Tyler Ott coming over from the Baltimore Ravens. But the offseason can quickly fade away into the background, the minds of a lot of you guys. Because, you know, everyone's got some stuff going on. You got life going on. It's really the downtime of football. Now, I know all you guys are excited not just for the NFL, but with college football. I know a lot of you out there are Virginia Tech fans, Virginia, you're Maryland fans. Maybe you guys like following some of those big-time programs, Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama, you're an SEC fan. It is the best time of year to just take a step back, though, and look at these rosters as far as the additions, the subtractions, both good and bad, within the NFC East. And that's what we're going to do today, and we're going to focus primarily on the draft. Again, what the Giants, the Cowboys, and the Eagles did in the 2024 NFL Draft. If you missed my last episode, I went in to GM Adam Peters' first haul in Washington, a haul that I absolutely loved, a haul that kicked off with the second overall pick, brand new face of the franchise and quarterback Jaden Daniels, and wrapped up with seventh rounder edge rusher Javonte Jean-Baptiste out of Notre Dame. And we're going to do that exact same thing today and get my thoughts as far as what GM Joe Shane in New York, Jerry Jones, Mike McCarthy, Stephen Jones, and that group in Dallas, and of course GM Howie Roseman did in Philadelphia. So first things first, today we're going to kick it off with the Dallas Cowboys, a team every single year we sit here, not going to say we, not myself, but others will sit here and anoint Dallas always as a team that's that 1A, 1B in the East, and a team that's always going to be top 3, 4, 5 and the conference. And every single year, it just doesn't turn out that way. And every single time we get to December and to January and it comes playoff time, we see Dallas fall on their face. And I know a lot of you guys out there absolutely love to see that. So let's get in to their roster. Because this year, they had a lot of losses. They saw the retirement, medical retirement of Leighton Vander Esch. He's no longer in the middle of that defense. Guys like Stephon Gilmore. Of course, Washington brought over not only just Dan Quinn, but Dorrance Armstrong, Dante Fowler, Noah Igbinoghene. All these guys are now in Washington. And Dallas has holes on their roster. Ezekiel Elliott is now back in Dallas. He's going to be their RB1 this year. Best of luck for them after losing Tony Pollard to the Titans. He'll now pair with Tajay Spears in Tennessee. That'll be a fun pairing to watch. After, of course, Tennessee lost Derrick Henry, who will now pair with Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. But Dallas has holes. And it starts along this front five. That lost future Hall of Famer, Tyron Smith, that's now with the Jets. And Tyler Biadasz, who is now the Washington Commanders' slated starter for 2024 at the pivot spot along this offensive line. A player that is a huge addition for this offensive line and offense because of what? Jaden Daniels is a young quarterback. Allowing Biadasz, who's seen it all at the center spot for Dallas over the years, coming in from Wisconsin as a highly touted recruit in high school, and obviously as a player out of the Big Ten, you know what you're going to get at an offensive lineman in the Big Ten. You always know what you're going to get. But it's a huge signing for Washington. Excited to see how that relationship between he and Jaden Daniels comes along, not only in training camp, but in the first month, month and a half of the season when games start to count. But Dallas kicked off their haul, selecting one of my favorite players in the class with value at the 29th overall selection. This was a player I had as a top 20 player on my board. And that's Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma, who is slated to start at left tackle to protect Dak Prescott's blindside early on in his career, and which allows their former first-round pick and Tyler Smith, who's played left tackle and left guard early in his career out of Tulsa, to live at his really most comfortable spot inside with bumpers to him, right side at center, left tackle, and Guyton along the front five. So again, they kicked off their draft with Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma and with the 29th overall selection, a player I really like. Someone that is going to expand their playbook in the run game and passing game as far as what he's able to do as an athlete and in space. He's not the most technically refined player in this class, but as far as athletes at the position, the way that he moves, he can play left tackle, he can play right tackle, he can do everything for an offensive line. That was an excellent addition for them, specifically after losing a guy like Tyron Smith this offseason and what he's meant to that Dallas offensive line for just so darn long. Their next pick, they added Marshawn Neyland in the second round, 56th overall pick out of Western Michigan. I just mentioned they lost Dorrance Armstrong, they lost Dante Fowler. It is Micah Parsons and it is DeMarcus Lawrence, but who's behind them? Marshawn Neyland is a guy that's going to have no issues on early downs, extremely powerful kid. He is not twitched up, he's not 235, 40 pounds. He's going to be somebody that's going to be asked right away to be that rotational type of pass rusher. Again, power-laden game, wins with his hands. Really, it was Marshawn Neyland and Darius Robinson from Missouri that went to the Arizona Cardinals early in the 2024 NFL draft as far as guys that had the heaviest hands in this class. So his ability to really get into the chest plate of offensive linemen, jolt them back, he can win to the outside with power, he can put that outside foot in the ground and win to the inside. I want to see a little bit more consistency. I mean, I mentioned winning the outside with power. Usually you hear you're going to the outside with speed, threatening the outside shoulder. But if he can get inside and establish that leverage and really almost bull rush his way around that outside shoulder, around the edge to where you don't have to run that long arc around to get to the quarterback, Marshawn Neyland does that well. And a kid out of Western Michigan, saw him live at the Senior Bowl. Again, powerful kid, throwback type of build at the position. Where, again, no concerns on early downs for him, but he is going to be somebody right away that's going to work off of Micah Parsons and DeMarcus Lawrence as that rotational pass rusher for Dallas's front seven here in 2024. Then as they come back in the third round, they had two third-round selections. They took Marist Lufau, linebacker from Notre Dame, and Cooper Beebe, interior offensive lineman from Kansas State. I want to start right there with Cooper Beebe. He is going to start whether it is at center or either of the guard spots. Obviously at right guard, they got future Hall of Famer and Zach Martin. So it looks like Cooper Beebe is going to start at center because look, Tyler Smith is going to be slated at left guard. So he is potentially taking that spot of what Tyler Biadasz was in Dallas. And of course, now again, going to be in Washington. Cooper Beebe, guys, I've said it before. If you don't know what he looks like, you didn't watch him at Kansas State, go to your refrigerator, put a helmet on it, and that's Cooper Beebe. And I mean that in the best way possible, in that he is strong, he's physical, he's a wide body type of guy that lives on that vertical type of plane to where he just flat out gets after people. And quickly, as much as I just sat here and said, well, they lost Tyron Smith and they lost Tyler Biadasz, well, then you draft Tyler Guyton and you draft Cooper Beebe and you still got Tyler Smith and you still got Zach Martin, a future Hall of Famer again. That's an excellent left tackle, left guard, center, right guard combination. Now, they still have some questions at right tackle with Terrence Steele, and his ability to stay healthy consistently in 2024 will be big for them because they don't have great depth at the position. But they entered this year with TJ Bass and Brock Hoffman at left guard and center, and they boosted both of those spots. And of course, again, losing Tyron Smith at tackle. So quickly, this isn't the Dallas Cowboys line of old. It's not. But quickly, they've added young players. They added Tyler Smith again a couple years ago. Now Guyton, now Cooper Beebe, next to Zach Martin. That's a really good group starting to form together for Dallas there that will be tasked with blocking a line like Washington's, with, of course, with Daron Payne, John Allen, Johnny Newton, and John Ridgeway here early in 2024. Because, of course, we will see them at least twice here this fall. Maris Lufau from Notre Dame. Look, I had a seventh-round grade on this kid, taking him in the third round. For me, you know, from looking at it from a Dallas perspective, as far as, you know, glad Dallas took him there, right? At 87 overall, no shot in hell was Maris Lufau, a top 100 player for me on my board. The instincts, the willingness to hit, the physicality, the aggressiveness, all of that is definitely bolded and checked off. But as far as marrying that and slowing down the game with what you're going to have to do at the second level, what he may be asked to do, questions the process there from what Dallas saw in him. And Dallas as a team, if you look over the years, guys, has not been able to draft a linebacker spot. They drafted Micah Parsons to play off-ball linebacker, guys, from Penn State. Now he's in primary edge rusher. They've drafted the likes of Jabril Cox, right? Our familiar face in Washington in Jabril Cox. They've drafted guys like Damone Clark out of LSU. DeMarvian Overshown they drafted last year out of Texas. They've tried to play that hybrid role with Keanu Neal. Now they're trying it again with drafting a guy like Maris Lufau. They haven't had a solid linebacker there in the early days of Jalen Smith and the early days of Leighton Vander Esch. And I mentioned at the top, Leighton Vander Esch is now medically retired. So Maris is going to be that guy. He's going to play early. He's a top 90 pick in this draft. They have questions at linebacker. Again, they've spent three consecutive years of taking linebackers with high draft capital. Who's going to play? Because you only get 11 guys on the field at once, right? So with Maris, I think there's a long way to go for him as a football player. But again, aggressiveness, physicality, he'll run around and hit things. That's fine. But I can get that in the sixth round. I can get that in the seventh round. So seeing what, even with what a Washington did with drafting a guy like Jordan McGee out of Temple in the middle portions of day three, I love that type of addition. And then you look at Dallas and drafting this type of player in the top 90, that's where you start to realize, or you see across the league, how teams are drafting and setting themselves up for success. When I specifically look at what Washington did here with the linebacking position and how what Dallas drafted Maris Lufau with the 87th overall pick and a Jordan McGee type of addition in Washington that'll cut his teeth on special teams, run around, make plays for you at 230 pounds. Love that value. I love that addition there. Now, if Dallas took Maris in this fifth, sixth round, that fits. But in the third, I got questions as far as that selection there and what he's going to be asked to do there in that Cowboys defense. So then I talked about Cooper. Then they come back. They have a fourth-round pick. Fifth round, they took Kalen Carson, defensive back, out of Wake Forest. Athletic kid. Would have liked to see him down at the Senior Bowl, but he backed out of that event just a few days before we got down there to Mobile. He's going to add some depth in their room. Still a young kid at just 22 years old. I really like the Ryan Flournoy addition out of Southeast Missouri State. One of the most athletic kids in college football these last few years. Just haven't had a ton of attention because he's at, again, Southeast Missouri State. But 6'2", 6'3", over 210 pounds, crazy rocked up frame, athletic kid, will go above the rim and get it for you. So that wide receiver 4'5", is what he's going to be fighting for behind Jalen Tolbert in Dallas, who they still really like, even though he's had his troubles in really dissecting and learning the playbook in Dallas, from what I've been told. So Ryan's going to add some, again, athleticism, some pop in the room, and just some competition for guys in Dallas, again, as they enter 2024 with a lot of questions, not just as far as who's going to play on the outside, but Dak Prescott, Mike McCarthy, are they the future in Dallas if they don't reach expectations, which, as you guys know, is not just competing in the East, it's reaching potential NFC divisional round, title round, or potentially a Super Bowl, and they don't get there this year, there's going to be some questions to be answered there for Dallas. So their final pick, final two picks there in the seventh round, Nathan Thomas, offensive lineman from Louisiana Lafayette, that got some good buzz in this pre-draft process, and Justin Rogers from Auburn, who really complimented a kid and I really liked in this process from Auburn as well, and Marcus Harris. Justin, again, is going to provide some depth along that defensive line as well. So that is the Dallas Cowboys 2024 draft haul from top to bottom. The Tyler Guyton edition, I do like. Cooper Beebe, I like. A lot of questions with a guy like Maris Lufau. And on day, really early portions of day three, into the back end of day three, just took flyers on some guys. Not a lot of guys that have a lot of pop, athletic profile that you want to take traits on. They just took some players. If any of those picks I just mentioned late on day three, I do like Ryan Flournoy. I think he's a really athletic kid, mature. He's already 24 years old. And then Justin Rogers, as far as a big physical kid that can play one tech, three tech, provide you some of that depth along the defensive line that a lot of teams need. It's not just two guys like we've seen in Washington with DeRon and John Allen. You've seen the additions of drafting guys like Fenerian Mathis and bringing in John Ridgeway or signing the likes of Abdullah Anderson from last year. And of course, now taking Johnny Newton in the second round in the top 40, always need players that can play within the interior. So from there, let's get into the New York Giants draft haul. It was not a 9, 10, 11 pick haul for GM Joe Shane. It's a big year for them. Obviously, the Giants came down to earth in 2023 after an electric first season for Brian Daboll after coming over from Buffalo, making the playoffs, beating the Vikings in the first round. Again, I said in the pod months ago, before leading up to the season, as far as I expected the Giants to come down to earth, and they did. And then now this year, they got to get players. But I do have questions as far as what the goal is for the Giants this year, because they did not draft a quarterback at all. They had their chances at a J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix, Bo Nix, Spencer Rattler. There was a historic slide on quarterbacks post top 12 after Bo Nix went. It was 140 or 50 picks, something crazy like that, from a historic slide to when Spencer Rattler ultimately was taken by the New Orleans Saints. But the Giants kicked off their draft haul with Malik Nabers. Now, look, hell of a talent. I think Malik Nabers, first off, he was wide receiver one on a lot of teams' boards here in this process. It was not Marvin Harrison Jr., and it was not Romo Dunze. It was Malik Nabers. I think he's an electric player. However, who the hell is throwing him the football? And for you guys out here in Washington that understand that with Terry McLaurin and Jahan Dotson, specifically with Terry, who's been through the carousel with quarterbacks, now you have Malik in the building to where they've been trying to get receivers in the building. They've drafted Wandale Robinson. They drafted Jalin Hyatt. They tried to bring in a guy like Darren Waller from the Raiders, who's been teasing with retirement for the last few weeks, and we'll see what happens there. But now you look at Malik Nabers, the most talented receiver in New York since Odell Beckham Jr. was there, a fellow LSU Tiger. But you don't have a guy to be able to throw him the football with consistency and on time, whether that's a 5-yard slant or it's a 40-yard go ball. Malik Nabers is dynamic after the catch. So a lot of designated touches, rhythm routes, timing routes, that's going to be prioritized early on in 2024 for the New York Giants. Again, they have some bodies on the outside. Darius Slayton is back. I mentioned Wandale. I mentioned Jalin Hyatt. They don't have Saquon Barkley, though. And that's a huge loss for this football team, bringing in Devin Singletary to where teams would consistently attempt to stack the box and force Daniel Jones to throw. Now it may be a little bit opposite to where they may play a little lighter in the box and force them to run and say, look, we're just going to double Malik Nabers and bracket him, and we're going to force everything underneath to where I'm not allowing you to try to push it down the field, because fundamentally both Daniel Jones and Drew Lock can throw the football, but accurately and on time and understand how to read a defense, man zone, where the linebackers are, what the hell the safeties are doing, who's blitzing, who's not. I personally, I don't have any confidence in any of those guys doing that. and it really was a surprise, that GM Joe Shane in New York did not flat out make an addition at the quarterback spot, because as it looks right now, it is the Daniel Jones, Drew Lock show for the Giants, at least in 2024. Now, it's going to be months until we sit here and we start talking about the 2025 class with Shedeur Sanders and Quinn Ewers and Carson Beck and Drew Aller and Jalen Milroe from Alabama. That conversation is to come here in these next few months as we get into the fall and into the winter months. But at the end of the day, they don't have anybody throwing the damn football to a pick at number six and Malik Nabers. That's a sensational athlete, sensational football player. And if you don't have the guy to give to couple that correlating success to the receiver and quarterback position, then there really was no reason to draft a player like Malik there. I wouldn't have been surprised if New York traded out of the top 10, get more picks, maybe trade to 9, 10 or something like that if a team wanted to come up and get a J.J. McCarthy. Because obviously the plan was not to take him. It was to take Malik Nabers. Again, love the talent, love the player, but the fit is abysmal. And I don't know who's throwing him the football here in 2024. Following his pick, they came back. Tyler Newbin in the second round, top safety in this class, the 47th overall pick. The Giants lost Xavier McKinney in free agency to the Green Bay Packers this year, so Newbin's going to be able to play in multiple depths for them. Andrew Phillips at the 70th overall pick in the third round from Kentucky. He's nickel specific. I thought they needed a flat-out outside corner, but really with the 70th overall pick, that is where those nickel-specific guys started to go off the board, right? We saw Mike Sanders still, of course, go to Washington. Jerrion Jones go to Jacksonville. Max Melton, of course, goes to Arizona. So those are some of those nickel-specific guys that really came off the board away from your Renardo Greens that also he went to San Francisco. So the corner class thinned out extremely quick as we moved into day two. And I'm going to be interested because if they ask Andrew Phillips to play opposite Deontay Banks and they play Cordell Flott, who's 155 pounds soaking wet, consistently in 2024, that's going to be interesting. Because again, I love Andrew as an oversized nickel to play with open air to either shoulder. But on the perimeter, where you're playing against the Terry McLaurins, Devonta Smith, A.J. Brown, C.D. Lamb, it might be trouble for him early on in his career. Theo Johnson, tight end from Penn State, they drafted him with the 107th overall selection early on day three in the fourth round. It tells you a lot about what the potential is of Darren Waller in this offense. Again, T's retirement. We don't know exactly what's going to happen there, but there's been a lot of conversations here these last few weeks. They drafted Daniel Bellinger out of San Diego State a couple years ago, but he is more of that John Bates type of role. Live with your hand in the dirt, further extension of the offensive line. Very limited athleticism as far as what you're going to expect in space or to ever truly threaten a defense up the seam. But I like Theo Johnson's game. You could argue that he wasn't the best tight end on Penn State's roster. That arguably is Tyler Warren, a name we're going to hear next year. But Theo Johnson is absolutely going to play this year a lot for the Giants. I liked their pick in the fifth round, Tyrone Tracy, a mature kid, 24 years old, out of Purdue. Had a really good pre-draft process at Shrine, really good hands in space. I expect him to challenge guys like Eric Gray, like Devin Singletary, absolutely for carries early on. He was a more underrated name in this class that rose the final 2-3 weeks as we led up to Detroit. So you guys are looking for fantasy sleepers potentially, or you guys love making money on FanDuel or DraftKings and daily fantasy sports for guys that could outplay some expectations in the preseason. Keep an eye on Tyrone Tracy from Purdue. Again, fifth rounder that's going to get a lot of snaps in the summertime in those preseason games for him to try to make the roster. And I absolutely expect him to do so in New York. A couple of their final picks here. Well, they're definitely their final pick in the sixth round. Darius Musau from UCLA. Another guy that rose in the pre-draft process as we got towards December, January. Look, UCLA was really headlined by their front seven defenders with Leetu Latu, of course, first rounder to the Colts. Gabriel Murphy as well, that went actually undrafted, which is crazy to think, and goes to the Minnesota Vikings. I fully expect him to make the roster. Now, if you guys are interested in UDFAs to know, recently released an article out on Bleacher Report looking at one UDFA that I expect to make the final roster over roster cuts for each NFL team here as we move towards the summer months. So again, that is on Bleacher Report. You can search that up and dive into that. Again, undrafted free agents, I expect to make one on each roster across the NFL. Again, Darius Musau, just really live behind the pop that was up front for UCLA. Again, Latu and the Murphy twins that came over from North Texas this year. Really like all three of those guys, but Darius is going to be somebody that's going to cut his teeth on special teams. And rotationally, they could get some value for him in the middle of that defense. So that is the New York Giants, of course, headlined by Malik Nabers at the top, wide receiver from LSU. Excellent talent, hell of an athlete, hell of a football player. I just flat out, guys, don't know who's going to get him the football. Andrew Phillips, I'm interested to see if they play him inside or outside, opposite of Deontay Banks, first rounder they took out of Maryland last year that had a hell of a rookie season. Theo Johnson's going to play in that 12 personnel, one running back, two tight ends for this Giants offense this year. Tyrone Tracy, running back from Purdue in the fifth round, lots of value from him, expecting to be a versatile piece as well. So that is the Giants haul. Let's finally get into the Philadelphia Eagles. As we look at it from right now, the favorites in the NFC East, obviously a disappointing end to their 2023 campaign where it got really ugly in the middle of the season. I know a lot of you guys out there love to see it. I mean, everything was perfect in 2022 when they ran through the entire NFC and they made the Super Bowl and they were really a half away from raising their second Super Bowl trophy. But in 2023, they finally faced adversity and they really hid behind the couch, if you will. NFL isn't perfect. You got to battle through it. And for them, you know, there's been a lot of questions with how Howie Roseman's drafted within the front seven, with Jordan Davis's stamina concerns and N'Kobe Dean's injury concerns. Let's get into this draft haul where I think this is going to be. I like the picks. I also respected Howie Roseman adding draft capital. Nine trades that Howie Roseman made in this draft process, the most ever since draft trades were tracked since 1990. Again, just when he wasn't on the clock, he was on the phone making deals, adding a third, a fourth, and a fifth in next year's draft already. So Philly kicked off their draft with the premier corner in this class for me. That was Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo. Had a hell of a pre-draft process down in Mobile, ran well at the combine, tested well. Look, Philadelphia has needed talent in their secondary. The combination of Darius Slay, James Bradbury did not work at all in 2023, especially in the middle of the back end of the season, let alone the playoffs where they got taken behind the barn and got their ass whooped down there in Tampa Bay against Baker Mayfield in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a game that wasn't even close. Quinyon immediately, for me, is CB1 on their roster, most talented player that they have in that corner's room. Look, they brought back Avante Maddox to play that nickel spot. That shouldn't scare anybody away as far as where does Quinyon line up if Slay and Bradbury are the guys. And then they also came back and drafted a guy in Cooper DeJean. So Roseman's first two picks this year, corner, Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean. Now, Quinyon is someone I expect to play more man zone, so versatile type of player, excellent instincts. I mean, look back to his four interception game that he had against Rocky Lombardi in the Northern Illinois offense. Now, I know that's Northern Illinois. I know it's the MAC, but don't scout helmet decals. Scout the player, and Quinyon Mitchell, I do feel like, now you guys don't want to hear this, but I feel like he's going to be a hell of a player for Philadelphia for a long time. I think he's a hell of a young man. I got to know at the Senior Bowl and in this pre-draft process. And then when he puts on the helmet and straps in, he really does flip a switch on the outside as a highly athletic kid, fluid hips, can rise over somebody, play above the rim, come downhill and tackle. Just a really good player that's going to fit well inside that new look Eagles defense this year under defensive coordinator Vic Fangio. Cooper DeJean is a little bit more scheme specific for me. I'm not sure if he ever is going to live at corner for the entirety of his career. I do think there's a potential of quickly transitioning to safety just because I do like his eyes in zone and the ability to work downhill and be physical at the second level. From a corner's perspective, I do think he's the best tackler out of any corner in this draft, but you know, you don't draft corners to tackle, you draft them to cover. And look, if you throw Cooper DeJean, similarly to what we saw last year with Emmanuel Forbes in Washington, if you throw Cooper in man right away, you're going to have issues. I think there's some tightness in his hips, the long speed. I know he's a hell of an athlete. He's coming off an injury in his lower half. There's some concerns there for me. I know there are some questions with some teams I talked to specifically in the AFC as far as in this process with Cooper's evaluation, because we didn't see him at the Senior Bowl. We didn't see him at the Shrine Bowl. We didn't see him compete at the Combine. So there were some questions there as far as for NFL scouts, as far as, you know, I want to see this kid for one final time, maybe at the Senior Bowl, strapping up against some of the best receivers in the country, or test at the combine with some of the best corners in the country. So Cooper DeJean, for me, is very scheme specific to where if you're going to run 70% zone, I like Cooper in your defense. But if you're a hybrid man zone defense, Fangio can play some heavy zone. He'll play some heavy man at times. He'll mix it up on the back end and be exotic at times. For me right now, Cooper DeJean's immediate projection to reaching that performance ceiling could come at that strong safety spot to where he's roaming at a variety of linemen. He can really attack downhill, create plays in the fringe areas, pick off passes over the middle of the field against tight ends, provide that extra body against crossers over the middle of the field. And then he does have the hips to turn and run if he has to as that final third defender. But if you're on the outside and you're 5 yards off against Terry McLaurin, I got some questions. Even a guy against like Malik Nabers, I wouldn't put Cooper DeJean early asking Reed Blankenship, for example, in Philly, or C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who they brought back, who's going to live at that second level. I wouldn't ask him to line up on the outside with no safety help early on in his career, because I do think that will spell trouble. So again, I like Quinyon Mitchell as a guy I'll play in either scheme. It doesn't matter. But Cooper DeJean, if you ask him to play man right away as a perimeter corner, I have questions. But if you ask him to live in zone, potentially also rotate from safety to corner, then I like that fit as well. So those were Philly's first two selections. Then they took Jalix Hunt, a riser in this process. For those of you that follow me on Twitter, X, whatever the hell you want to call it, @_RyanFowler, I talked about Jalix Hunt a couple days before the draft kicked off as a riser and a name that continued to rise. And he ended up being a top 95 player in this class out of Houston Christian, a kid with an extremely unique background, a transfer from Cornell in the Ivy League that played safety, transferred down to the defensive line, lived at edge. And you know Howie Roseman's always going to prioritize edge rushers. Now, they're going to have a little bit of a new look on the edge this year. They lost Hassan Reddick to the Jets. They brought back Bryce Huff from the Jets. So it was a little almost a swap, even though it wasn't a trade. So some new faces on the edge for Philly this year. And Jalix Hunt's going to be somebody that's going to challenge for snaps. Now, he is really the ultimate ball of clay at the position. He's a young kid from a small school that used to play safety, but he's got the length, he's got the twitch, and he's physical, and he will hit the shit out of you. And I love that about Jalix's game, but it's just refining his ability specifically on early downs, countering the run game, setting the edge. And then when you're asked to pin your ears back and have enough hand counters, twitch to the inside, do you have a spin move that you could potentially deploy? And how powerful is your bull rush? And can you win with your hands at a potentially consistent rate to threaten for consistent DPR snaps along what is a deep depth chart for Philadelphia at the edge spot? So again, 94th overall selection, Jalix Hunt out of Houston Christian will challenge for snaps this year within the front seven, but he is a major ball of clay for me in this process. But again, was not surprised to hear his name called in the top 100 after he rose really in the last month or so before we got to Detroit. They came back in the fourth round, drafted Will Shipley, running back out of Clemson. Obviously, DeAndre Swift is no longer in Philadelphia. He is now in Chicago. Well, he'll take handoffs from Caleb Williams, but Will Shipley will provide a nice complement to a guy like Kenneth Gainwell. I like his footwork. I like his vision. He's tough as nails, so all the Philadelphia people, look, they'll love him as far as just a guy that will bring his lunch pail to work. He'll do anything for you. He'll also return kicks. These new return kickoff rules, they're going to add a new dynamic to the game as far as how guys are going to be rostered. I'm sure you guys heard the last few weeks with the Steelers potentially talking about putting Justin Fields back there returning kicks. It's going to be interesting to see what teams do, guys, but kickoffs are back in the game of football, and I'm happy for it. Now, are we ever going to see another Devin Hester, Brian Mitchell, Josh Cribbs, Dante Hall type of returners? I don't know. You know, but just seeing returns in general back in football. I mean, think back when we were all kids, you know, we're playing football and you start the game off, you always want to be the one back there returning kicks. You didn't want to be the guy blocking, right? You always want to return kicks. It's always a fun part of the game. It's a game that was really lost these last 3-4 years in football. I'm glad it's coming back. The physicality is still going to be there. But now those short, quick upfield bursts, break a tackle or two, could turn a 10-yard gain into a 40, 50-yard gain and flip the field, and also continue to provide that excitement to kick off games and flip the field in crucial scenarios. So a guy like Will Shipley out of Clemson, former highly rated recruit, tons of experience in the ACC, he's going to challenge absolutely for snaps this year in multiple phases for that Philadelphia Eagles offense. Then they boosted the offensive line, drafting a guy like Trevor Keegan that spent a lot of time within the interior for that Michigan Wolverines national championship team. He could play some guard. He could play some center. I think he's extremely versatile along the front five. He's well coached. There's not a lot of front fives in college that are extremely well coached as far as getting off the ball, getting in space. Really, you look at Michigan, you look at Ohio State, you look at Notre Dame, you look at Oregon State. Really just teams that pop off the tape for me, early on, just off the top of my head as far as teams that are just so well coached. So Michigan is absolutely one of those teams that's been so darn well coached here over these last 5 to 10 years along the offensive line. So Trevor Keegan's going to add some pop for Philadelphia along the interior as a depth player. Jeremiah Trotter Jr. from Clemson, young kid, 21 years old. His dad obviously has that legacy in Philadelphia. Of course, the Eagles drafted him here in the fifth round. I talked to you guys on pods leading up to this process where I dove into my top linebackers. Jeremiah Trotter was in the fringe top five for me. I didn't think he was a top 100 player. He didn't go in the top 100. Conversations with scouts headed into this process. He's too small. He can't cover. He can't get off blocks. Guys, there's a reason why he was available with the 155th overall selection in the fifth round. And honestly, for Philadelphia, I get the legacy stuff, but at the end of the day, you're trying to build a roster. And this is a team that has not been able to hit on linebackers, seemingly like Dallas has, for the last few years. I mean, Alex Singleton, they brought in Zach Cunningham, Shaq Leonard over the last year or so tried to figure it out there. N'Kobe Dean's consistently battled injury, and he can't get off a block to save his life. So playing off of the guys in front of him is great. And Jeremiah Trotter did that at Clemson with Brian Brzee and Xavier Thomas and Miles Murphy and KJ Henry and Tyler Davis and Peter Woods is a name to know in these next few years. That's all a lot of talent along that Clemson front. But can you get off blocks when you got free centers and free guards and free tackles coming up to that second level and then making a tackle? Can you carry a tight end up the seam without getting big boy 10 yards down the field? Jeremiah Trotter Jr. is a good football player, as is N'Kobe Dean. But football, at the end of the day, guys, is a big boys game. And I'm going to be interested to see what Philadelphia does, because potentially, you look at this defense right now, you could see a lot of two linebacker sets with N'Kobe Dean and Jeremiah Trotter in the middle of the defense. That's extremely, extremely small. And that's going to create a lot of mismatches in space against quicker running backs and bigger tight ends. And you don't have to be, I'm not asking you to be Travis Kelce or a George Kittle or a Sam Laporta or anything like that. But if you're 6'3", 6'4", and you understand how to win leverage, Trotter and Dean are going to have a nightmare in covering over the middle of the field, and teams are absolutely going to identify that early and pick them apart, let alone if offensive linemen at 6'6", 320, 30, 40 pounds working up to the second level in free grass. So you can see my concerns there as far as looking at this thing from a 10,000-foot view for the Philadelphia Eagles. As far as, look, I understand the legacy, but the player as a whole, for me, I wouldn't have taken him. In the fifth round, value, sure. Good football player. If he was 2 inches taller, 20 pounds heavier, we'd be talking about a whole different ballgame as far as where he could have come off the board. But they put themselves in a little bit of a conundrum there with extremely small players in the middle of their defense that have similar holes in their game, specifically on early downs and flat out getting off of blocks and being able to counter bigger tight ends up the seam on those high leverage situations on those third sixes and sevens. So after Jeremiah Trotter, they added a special teams core contributor, versatile offensive piece in Anaya Smith from Texas A&M. He's an extremely mature kid, lots of success in the SEC. I think this is one of my favorite picks, really, for the Eagles in this draft in the fifth round. I just think, look, fifth round, special teams pop. I mentioned it with Will Shipley, where he's primarily going to live at running back. Anias, I expect right away to challenge for, to be, look, their punt returner and their kick returner from day one. Every year, we have a couple guys that really move the needle for scouts as far as primary kick returners. Anias Smith was one of those guys this year. Last year, it was Darius Davis from TCU that went to the Los Angeles Chargers, had a nice first season for them as a guy that was able to flip the field a little bit. And off the top of my head, I believe he returned a kick back in 2023 for the Chargers. Anais is going to be that guy. Now, I don't expect him to challenge guys like A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith for targets. But again, versatile piece, designated touches, a guy that can expand the playbook, excellent in the open field. He's about 5'9", 5'10", 180, 85 pounds. But again, SEC experience, high-level athlete, lateral agility. He's got that burst to run by people, second and third level. And I expect him again right away to be that core special teamer for the Eagles here in 2024. They added some more pop in Dylan McMahon, guard, center, versatile out of NC State. And then they wrapped up their draft class with a really intriguing player in Johnny Wilson out of Florida State. A lot of questions with him in this process as well. Is he the best at tight end? Is he best on the outside? 6'6", over 215, 20 pounds. Is he ever going to make that transition full-time to tight ends? Everything that I've heard out of Philadelphia and scouts in this process is that no, he's not. He's going to live on the outside. And look, as a sixth-round pick, the 185th overall selection, me personally did not expect him to be there. I thought he was going to be off the board later portions of the fourth round, but here he is in the sixth. And, you know, he's going to be someone that attention is not going to be on him right away. And he's another big target as far as minimal expectations to go in the red zone and rise over people if you want him to. Johnny Wilson can do that. He and Keon Coleman, Jaheim Bell, Trey Benson were that four-headed monster, if you will, for Florida State this year with a quarterback, of course, by Jordan Travis when he was healthy. And Johnny can play. He can. I have a couple concerns with him over separating, over long-armed guys in that contact window. Guys that got good footwork. Guys that understand leverage. When we think about Johnny Wilson, we think about big receivers. You try to think about, oh, he can just go over the top of everybody. Well, living in that contested catch area is really tough for receivers. That's really tough to make a living just saying, hey, I'm going to throw the ball up and you go get it. That's tough, guys. But Johnny Wilson is a good route runner. You know, he's not super fluid, not super sudden, cracking off routes back to the quarterback, to the outside. But he is nuanced. And I think he's someone that, look, transferred in from Arizona State. He's had success in the Pac-12 and the ACC, became one of the nation's top receivers this year. And he's got that size to also block on the perimeter. You're a wide receiver 4 or 5 for an offense. You better block your ass off or you're not going to get snaps. And an offense right now with Philadelphia to where the top two targets are absolutely set in stone for potentially the next 4 to 6 years in A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith, the newly extended A.J. Brown, you're going to have to do something to stand out. And again, I don't expect him to move down to tight end, but challenging for wide receiver 4 snaps, wide receiver 3 snaps is something that Johnny Wilson's going to be expected to do this year. Going to draw a lot of attention because he was at Florida State. The success that he and the team had in 2023. Of course, he looks the part. He's a big kid at 6'6". He's all of 6'6". Big kid. Saw down at the Senior Bowl. Had a good week, but I would have liked to see more, again, in his suddenness as a route runner. Ability to get off guys at the top of his route and create that separation, which is so damn important at the NFL level. If you can't separate at the NFL level, it's tough to get on the football field. And if you're that big and you got high hips, you got long, long legs, guys are able to get into your frame and you don't have that free space to move, sometimes it takes guys longer than others. And sometimes for some players, they just are never able to figure it out on the outside. Look at a guy like Hakeem Butler out of Iowa State years ago that the Cardinals prioritized high in the draft. Bigger kid, just was never able to figure out the nuances of separation and finding that against man or zone at the NFL level. So that is the Philadelphia Eagles draft. Again, headlined at the top by two corners in Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean. That will immediately challenge Darius Slay and James Bradberry for snaps here early on in 2024. So that is the entire NFC East, guys. Dallas Cowboys, New York Giants, Philadelphia Eagles. A look around the division, if you will. If you guys missed my recap of Washington's draft, that's on the last episode. We'll have an episode out for you guys planning next week. Always appreciate you guys tuning in. We're on all podcast platforms. Of course, you can find my work always on Bleacher Report and the Draft Network, and I'm on X at _ Ryan Fowler. So we'll talk to you soon. Hope you guys enjoy the rest of your week. Football's right around the corner. We got mini camps across the league kicking off here. I know the Chiefs have already gotten going for Washington. We got Jaden Daniels and the guys coming into town here today as we speak. I know a lot of their guys are making their way in. If you guys missed my conversation with Commanders tight end Ben Sinnott, I had a live Twitter Spaces with him last week. Planning to talk also with Luke McCaffrey here. Planning that next week as well. So lots of things to look forward to here as we move closer towards the summer months, which I know you guys are going to enjoy, as am I. And of course, football down the road. So appreciate you guys as always. I will talk to you soon. I'm Ryan Fowler, and this is Commanding the Huddle.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.